the Air Force aerial tanker contract controversy. What will the neighbors think? I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Wayne Plucker, who is an industry manager with Frost & Sullivan's Aerospace and Defense Group. We're here to talk about the rebidding of the aerial tanker contract by the U.S. Air Force, the KCX competition. And anybody who, I guess, has followed Aero News knows some background on this, but there's plenty out there if you want to read about it at aero-news.net over the last few years, going back to 2003. Wayne, thanks for taking a few minutes out to join our listeners today. Tell us a little bit about yourself and about Frost & Sullivan.
Sure, you bet. Well, let me start out with Frost & Sullivan. We're a global growth consulting company. We do market research, consulting, and a number of other things for Fortune 500 companies and many others as well. I myself am a 26-year Air Force veteran. As a matter of fact, a KC-135 flyer, maintainer, and operations planner. So the KC arena is one that I know well.
Well, now, when you say a growth consulting company in regard to Frost & Sullivan, your clients look to you for advice on where markets are going so they can make really long-term plans. Do I have that right?
Exactly right. To include mergers and acquisitions and many other features.
All right, let's wade into this murky pool that is the KCX tanker contract scenario. This thing has gone down in flames twice now. First, back in 2003, it resulted in a scandal where people actually went to jail. And that kind of looked bad for Boeing. Is there any baggage from that process still left in the current? Did that have anything to do with a bias against Boeing in the most recent selection process?
Everyone who was part of the program, part of the acquisition, said no. However, I can't help but wonder if there wasn't a 800-pound gorilla lurking in the back of the room, if you know what I mean.
There would seem to be at least some tendency on the part of any human being to say, well, I'll show them. You know, I'll show them that we're not biased. And that introduces a bias of its own.
Certainly. Certainly it does.
Well, now, in the latest round of competition, this thing was unfolding pretty transparently. You know, we could tell just from the things coming out of the individual companies and what little was trickling out of the Air Force process itself that there were things being looked at that were not part of the original request for proposals. And getting past all the issues of it should not matter from an employment standpoint, we should be looking just at the value of the aircraft itself for the role. Even in that context, it looked as though the larger, heavier, more expensive to maintain Airbus-based product was getting some slack cut here. Is that fair to say?
Well, I'm not sure what all the background was, and that a lot of that's buried, if you will, in the process. But certainly there has to be some way in which the acquisition folks make some kind of differentiation aircraft to aircraft if both of them meet the standards. And that's always been done. It just seems to be questionable on the surface of things whether the Air Force clearly elucidated what they were going to do for that redefinition.
Well, Wayne, in terms of redefinition, when should that have been taking place in that in this process? Because if I understand Boeing's contention, it is that their offering was very closely tailored to the Air Force's request for proposals. And then they found themselves, the Government Accountability Office, as it's now called, seemed to back them up on this, that the goalpost moved sometime after the ball was kicked.
Yeah, and I would agree with that assessment. Functionally, both aircraft met the basic criteria, at which time the Air Force acquisitions folks had to go back and redefine how they were going to assess additional brownie points, if you will, within the acquisitions process. And it's unclear whether they really made both parties clear on what those criteria were going to be. And yet that's a crucial part of any procurement activity.
These debates in public sometimes bother me because I understand why we have accountability and oversight of military procurement processes, because you're talking an awful lot of zeros and commas in any of these contracts, and it's important that they be done fairly and right. And obviously the incentive to have abuses creep in is high. But at the same time, there reaches a point where how does a congressman with no military experience legitimately go in and tell the Air Force, you chose the wrong product for your needs? What is the proper balance here, and is it being skewed one way or the other in this particular case?
The congressman can always make a fuss about it, but realistically, they did the right thing ultimately. They sent GAO to go look at it, and GAO is generally a fair broker. Sometimes they have their own sets of biases, but by and large, they're a fairly fair broker, and what they've revealed looks bad for the Air Force and the acquisition process. Now, the Air Force is certainly going to have an opportunity to respond to all that, and that may in and of itself clear up some of these things. But as far as the congressional influencing, I think they did ultimately what they were supposed to do, get the GAO involved, all the rhetoric notwithstanding.
Now, there's an awful lot of political noise going on in the background on this. The International Association of Machinists came out in the last couple of days saying they want it done right, but kind of implying that doing it right would be deciding on Boeing's side. There have been an awful lot of people who've tried to drag in the issue of how many jobs this would create in the United States being a U.S. contract. And then there's also the, you know, the people who say, now, wait a minute, that's not a consideration. We want the best weapon for the or the best asset for the military. Is the fact that this is moving now to a committee that's going to be selected by an undersecretary in the Department of Defense going to make this more influenced politically or less?
Well, I think they're going to have to do it painfully publicly. And as a result, it's probably going to end up fairer and less political.
All right. When we come back from our break, I want to ask you about the ramifications of this from the standpoint of our relationship with our neighbors in the world, because To an increasing extent every year, we are not an economic island anymore. And I want to talk to you more about that when we come back. My guest is Wayne Plucker, and you're listening to the Aero News Special Feature. I'm Paul Platt. We'll be back in a moment.
Shoot happens. Come on, you know it does. Even the world's top test pilots know there are in-flight situations you can't always recover from. Mid-air collision, control failure, pilot incapacitation. In severe emergencies, do what the world's top test pilots do. Use a parachute. Except, instead of having to bail out of a moving aircraft, you can have the safety of a BRS full airframe recovery parachute. BRS has parachutes for an enormous variety of aircraft, from experimental to light sport, and all the way to retrofits on certified airplanes. Shoot happens. Will you be ready when it does? Call BRS today at 651-457-8651 or visit us online at brsparachutes.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. I'm Paul Platt, talking today with Wayne Plucker, an industry manager with Frost & Sullivan's Aerospace and Defense Group. Frost & Sullivan is a company that helps its clients look at future growth in various industry segments and be in the right place at the right time. We're talking about the KCX tanker controversy. And Wayne, we talked a little bit about some of the factors influencing how the bids are going to be conducted. Let's talk about the impact on the European Union, because this was a comment that you had expressed a couple of weeks ago. You said, and these are the words from your press release, the reopening of the bidding for the new tanker aircraft is bound to have a chilling impact on European perceptions of the U.S. defense market. There have been a bunch of wins for EU firms in the U.S. defense arena recently, and that may partly mitigate the effect. However, since this is the most recent and largest contract award, it could be a lightning rod. I have a couple of questions for you on that, I guess. One is, the big global question is, do we care what the EU thinks of all this?
I think we have to. First of all, we're in a position now to benefit our economy by virtue of the sad shape of the dollar. We can sell some of our things in the EU much more effectively now. And just as that happens, we now have something that is going to send entirely the wrong message about buying American products. There may be some knee-jerk response on the part of folks in the EU to not buy American just as a result of this.
Well, now, what kind of products do we sell in this arena to other countries that, I mean, obviously Boeing and Sikorsky and a lot of companies have quite a few products that, you know, depend on foreign sales.
Certainly Boeing, but indeed across our entire economy, there's a lot of pieces, parts that go into ultimately European products, but start out here. And in the aerospace and defense business, it's especially true. We still export more of our goods, our aerospace and defense goods, than we manufacture for our own use.
Well, now there was talk on the part of Northrop Grumman that it might not be a foregone conclusion that Eads would be willing to participate in another round of bidding on this thing. Are we past that, do you think?
I would think so. I think from EAD's point of view, they almost dare not walk away from it. I mean, they kind of need to stand tall and be part of it. I think from their perspective, it's going to be important. They have a lot of other potential products that need to enter this market from their market planning perspective.
There is an aspect of this third go-around here that I think may be a positive in terms of how the U.S. is viewed, in terms of how it conducts economic policy, and that is that I don't think there's any other country that would subject the process to this much scrutiny and do it over for a third time. Does that speak well for us in terms of this whole image problem we could have with foreign countries?
I think it does. The countries still have to kind of get over the fact that it happened in the first place. But I think in general, the fact that we're willing to give programs that level of scrutiny and that level of fairness speaks well for us in general.
Well, I guess I should ask, Wayne, do you have enough knowledge of these two competing proposals to have had a personal favorite?
Well, my personal favorite was the Boeing aircraft. As a former operations planner, I had to strike off the list a whole lot of airfields worldwide for my planning purposes because I couldn't fit a KC-135 on it. A KC-767, if you want to call it that, would have taken up a little larger footprint. The KC-330 takes up a still huger footprint, and I all of a sudden am running out of good airfields to operate it from. For something like we did in Iraq, that's probably not a big deal, but that was a pretty large operation using a lot of airfields and a lot of conveniently available airfields. That may not be the case always.
Well, and at some point, if you're limited to a particular set of airfields at which you can land and operate, that obviously tips off an enemy on narrowing the list of places where you might be going.
Sure, absolutely, and it almost invariably ends up stretching your tanker assets because they're probably going to have to operate from at least a little further away than they would prefer to, et cetera, and therefore they have less offload capability, and a huge planning factor from my perspective.
Well, now, one final question on this whole front in terms of how we're perceived internationally. If I understand correctly, we're about to start receiving at any time some decisions from the World Trade Organization on the dueling complaints between the U.S. and the EU regarding whether Boeing or Airbus is receiving what amounts to government subsidies to conduct their business. Do you think that this is going to have any influence in that court?
Absolutely. Even if it's just a general background effect, I think it'll have an effect.
Well, Wayne, we certainly appreciate the benefit of your background, not only in flying the KC-135 and maintaining it and operating it, but also in your role these days as an industry manager with Frost & Sullivan. And this will be fascinating to watch. I don't think I've ever seen anything quite like this going on in government procurement. And we may want to call on you again for your opinion.
Yeah, trust me, this should be a heck of a show. Sell tickets.
My guest has been Wayne Plucker, an industry manager with Frost & Sullivan's Aerospace and Defense Group. And you can find out more about Frost & Sullivan at www.frost.com. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.